So because nobody sells uranium dioxide powder just for 3D printing application, we decided, you know, we'll roll up our sleeves and we'll get into this ourselves using a process called freeze granulation.
Hello, and welcome back to Free of Charge. We're a podcast by Canada's premier nuclear science and technology organization, Canadian Nuclear Laboratories, and we're recording from our Chalk River site today, which sits on the traditional unceded territory of the Algonquin Anishinaabe peoples. I'm your host, Danny Penaloza, and I'm a communications coordinator for our science and technology file here at Chalk River Labs. Today, we're talking with a fuel scientist about 3D printing nuclear fuel pellets, an innovation that could change the game for nuclear fuel efficiency. Hi, Anil. Thank you so much for being here today. Could you tell us a bit about yourself to start?
So my name is Anil Prasad. I'm a fuel scientist here at Canadian Nuclear Laboratories. I'm part of the Advanced Fuels and Reactor Physics branch, which falls under the Advanced Reactors Directorate. My role here essentially is working on advanced manufacturing technology, particularly in the field of nuclear fuel fabrication. I've been at CNL for around 3 years now. So I joined CNL immediately after my graduate degree. My graduate degree was in fact on nuclear fuel fabrication. So I had a background in nuclear fuel fabrication, and I had worked with Canadian Nuclear Laboratories as part of my graduate thesis. So that's essentially what brought me here.
Okay, thank you so much. So I know we're here to talk about this project you're leading on 3D printing nuclear fuel, but I think we should back up a bit and maybe let's start with how nuclear fuel is typically made for today's Canadian fleet of reactors and how that's very different from what your team is doing.
So typically nuclear fuel, it is made out of a substance called uranium dioxide. So uranium dioxide is essentially the fissile material within fuel that fissions inside a reactor and creates heat, which in turn is converted into steam, which runs generators, and you know that's how you get the electricity. Mm-hmm. So uranium dioxide is chemical form of uranium, and that's the preferred form of nuclear fuel for all the power reactors around the world because it has a very high melting point. Since nuclear fuel generates heat, you want it to have a high melting point so that you know you can operate reactors safely at high temperatures. So uranium dioxide, the way nuclear fuel is made is you take uranium dioxide powder and you essentially press it into a cylindrical shape, and then that's put in an oven, a really, really high temperature oven, which goes up to temperatures like 1800 degrees Celsius. And then essentially it is baked in that oven until it sort of shrinks into a cylindrical pellet. So all these power particles weld against each other to form a solid pellet. So the limitation with this process is that you can only press so many shapes. You cannot make complex shapes out of this sort of manufacturing process. And once these pellets are made, they are put into, you know, tubes that are made out of zirconium alloy, and then that's how it goes inside a reactor.
Okay, so you just mentioned that there's some limitations there with what shape you can press stuff into, but what are the limits there?
Yeah, so the problem with a cylindrical shape, I guess, is that, you know, it's only the outer surface of the cylinder that comes in contact with the coolant. If you can imagine, you know, the entire fuel is producing heat, but only the outer surface is essentially dissipating heat. And uranium dioxide, despite having a high melting point, it's actually a really bad thermal conductor. It's like a ceramic plate. It doesn't conduct heat that easily. So what happens is that the outer surface is usually at, you know, in a CANDU reactor, the outer surface is at something like 400 degrees Celsius, whereas the center line of the cylindrical pellet is at something like, you know, 1800 degrees Celsius. So this creates several limitations, for example, in terms of, you know, what temperature you could operate your reactor at, because you don't want the center of the pellet to melt. That is one challenge, and also the steep thermal gradient also causes cracks within the pellets and things like that that further deteriorate the heat transfer between fuel and the coolant. So one way to overcome this limitation would be by creating a fuel pellet that has complex channels within itself, you know, where you can actually pass the coolant through it, such that you could have the fuel operating at a much lower temperature and it'll be much better performing and also safer.
Okay, so not necessarily having a solid pellet all the way through, but it would have these channels through it. So that's where 3D printed fuel comes in, right?
Exactly. So our hope is that we could inspire fuel designers and, you know, reactor modelers to use 3D printing technology to essentially reimagine nuclear fuel, and such that you could have these spiral channels or, you know, fins and things like that that'll improve the heat transfer between nuclear fuel and the coolant.
Right. So a lot more flexibility of how you can design your pellet's shape.
Exactly. Yeah. 3D printing is a versatile technology that, you know, that lets you make any sort of part that you would design in your computer. 3D printing itself is just a broad umbrella, and there are several different technologies that fall under it. And so you could prototype different fuel shapes, and then, you know, you could even go as far as using 3D printing for the final manufacturing of these nuclear fuel pellets.
Right. So you folks have actually done this in real life, printing nuclear fuel pellets.
That's right. So this has been a project that's been going on even before I got here. So when I was a student, when I came here, I worked with a scientist named Andrew Bergeron. It was his vision to lead CNL into 3D printing of nuclear fuel. So he started by looking into something called thorium dioxide, which is a fertile fuel material, not necessarily a fissile fuel material, which means you need to put it in a reactor and breed it into a uranium before you can actually use it in a nuclear reactor. So thorium dioxide was successfully 3D printed in 2018 by Andrew. And this was done using a technology that was light-based. Our end goal always was to 3D print uranium dioxide. The problem with using a light-based technology for uranium dioxide is that uranium dioxide is a black substance, whereas thorium dioxide is a white substance. So it essentially absorbs light. So we couldn't use the same technology for uranium dioxide. So the way we 3D print uranium dioxide is by essentially taking a filament printer. So a filament printer melts a filament and deposits it along a certain path to create a three-dimensional shape. So we made our own filament that had uranium dioxide powder added to it. So we would make custom blends of uranium dioxide and a system of complex binders to make a filament that is loaded with uranium dioxide. And then we used a filament printer to print that. And this was successfully done for the first time in 2022. And as far as we know publicly, this was the first report on 3D printing uranium dioxide, which I think is a huge achievement because this is what powers pretty much 99% of civil power reactors around the world. So having this technology be accessible would open up a lot of possibilities for future fuel designers.
Right. That's incredible.
An interesting thing to mention here is also, you know, we are the Canadian Nuclear Laboratories, and we were pretty proud to pioneer this technology. So we printed a few shapes out of uranium dioxide. And one of the shapes we 3D printed was actually a maple leaf, which is a crowd pleaser whenever we have tour groups coming through our labs.
That's so cool.
So everyone's proud of the maple leaf. So yeah, this will probably be the only maple leaf that is 3D printed in the world. Yeah.
That is so, so neat. So I'm under the assumption that 3D printing nuclear fuel is not a simple process. So what does that look like? And what are some of the challenges your team faces doing this work?
So the 3D printing technology that we use, filament printing, it's not a complex technology. You could buy a filament printer at your home for less than $200. But it is making the uranium dioxide filament that is the challenge. Not just uranium dioxide filament, even making something out of simple ceramic material, a filament out of it, is really challenging. Because typically polymers or plastics that are used in the filaments are very flexible, but ceramics, like uranium dioxide, are brittle and hard. So incorporating that in a filament is really challenging. So we have a series of equipment and series of processes that we use to make these filaments. And we had to come up with our own recipe for the filament to essentially hold these uranium dioxide powder particles together. And of course, the biggest challenge is we are working with uranium dioxide, which is a radioactive material. So we need to have all the work controls in place to essentially safeguard our workers from any hazards associated with it. So just developing the work control process itself was a huge challenge and took us a lot of effort and time. And now that we have built that capability here, we would like to take that further. And essentially, we are trying to improve this process as we are working on it.
So using uranium dioxide as your filament is tricky to do. Like, it's very brittle. Mm-hmm. It's not as bendy and flexible and easy to work with as a plastic. So could you tell us a little bit more about how you make that and what the challenges are there.
So we essentially start with a powder, and that powder gets incorporated into a binder. And then we have this machine, which looks like a pizza dough kneading machine. So we need this uranium dioxide powder along with the binder to make this doughy kind of mixture, which we break up and then we put into something called a filament extruder to make the filament. And the filament goes into a 3D printer and then we print the shapes. The challenge that we have been facing with the powder is that the powder that we typically, well, the powder, if you are a uranium dioxide fuel manufacturer, if you go into your corner store and try to buy some uranium dioxide powder, the powder that you get is something called a spongy powder. So it is essentially like a sponge, and it works really well for making conventional nuclear fuel. You can press it into pellets, and then when you put it in the oven, it it shrinks very nicely into the final pellet. The challenge we have is as we are trying to add a binder, which which essentially melts at the temperature that we are kneading it in, the spongy powder essentially absorbs all this binder. So rather than coating it and binding the powder particles together, it just sort of absorbs all the binder liquid. So the current, that is a challenge we are facing. And the way we are trying to solve it is we are trying to make our own powder. So because nobody sells uranium dioxide powder just for 3D printing application, it's a niche application. So we decided, we'll roll up our sleeves and we'll get into this ourselves. So we started using a process called freeze granulation to make our own spherical powder. So if compared to the sponge, a spherical powder would essentially have really nice rounded edges, and it'll get nicely coated by the binder. And always spheres are better for any process where materials are moving and things are flowing. So that's what a typical starting material for 3D printing looks like. The powder has to be in spherical form. So we are using something called freeze granulation. So in freeze granulation, you take the uranium dioxide powder, the spongy powder, and then you put it in a slurry, and you would spray that slurry into liquid nitrogen. And this slurry is actually water-based. So as it hits the liquid nitrogen, it freezes into spheres. And then we use a process called freeze drying to drive the ice directly from solid state to vapor state, so it'll retain the spherical form. And then our goal is to use this powder for making our own new filament, which will be better than the old filament that we have been using.
Right. So where does this work take place at Chalk River Labs? Like, do you have a special lab where you do this? What does it look like?
Yeah, we do have a special licensed lab where we are allowed to handle these materials. The labs that I'm talking about are the fuel development labs. So we have fume hoods and equipments where we could put inside fume hoods to essentially contain all the powder particles. So all the work happens inside fume hoods until, the uranium dioxide is changed into solid form, where we don't have to worry about any sort of airborne hazards. Yeah, so we have all the work controls in place. We have the processes. We have a set of PPNC that we use whenever we work with these equipments and materials.
Yeah, could you tell us a little bit more about, that personal protective equipment that people are wearing when they're doing this? Like, how does it all work? What does it look like?
So the filament making process itself, part of it happens outside of fume hood. And it happens inside a temporary ventilated enclosure. So that's where the pizza kneading machine sits. And then in that case, since it is happening outside a fume hood, the workers need to wear respirators, and they would wear full Tyvek suits. And Tyvek is one of those personal protective equipments, which if you get it contaminated, you can just dispose off of it. It's one of those suits. And then the printing process actually happens inside a fume hood. And once it's inside a fume hood, we don't have to worry about any airborne hazards. So usually the worker isn't wearing respirator, but they usually wear things like double gloves and, Tyvek lab coats just to protect their hands.
So because you've already 3D printed the real deal uranium dioxide, like you said, does this mean that you have a 3D printer that's strictly for printing radioactive stuff, or is there a way to clean it out to do non-active work? What is that like?
So we could clean it out to use it for non-active work, but we simply don't want to because the printers that we use itself are very cheap. Like I said, it's the process that goes into making the filament that that printer can use is what the challenge is. The printer that we use, I can say it's only $1,000. So to clean it would be a lot more costly. So we just have two printers, one that prints clean stuff and one that prints uranium dioxide.
Okay.
Yeah.
So can you walk us through what the timeline of this work looks like?
Yeah, so we have, like I said, we have started working on this since, I think, 2016, I want to say. And this was before I got here. And 2018 was when we printed thorium dioxide fuel. Mm-hmm. And then uranium dioxide fuel, that was after I got here. That we printed in 2022, March. And then since then, we have been mostly working on improving the process, you know, how we could make our own powder and then incorporate that into the filament. So at the moment, our goal is to keep working on this and keep improving the process such that we could get it to the point where we could talk more about it openly and, you know, we could publish about it so that we could attract fuel designers and other collaborators to come to us, you know, to make different shapes that are of interest for nuclear fuel. So yeah, so our goal is to get the technology mature enough so that it could be more research and also maybe much further down in future, you know, it could be applied for reactors.
Thank you so, so much for telling us about this project that you're working on. It's so exciting to think about what the future of fuels could be.
I certainly couldn't agree more.
Thank you for listening to another episode of Free of Charge, Conversations in Canadian Nuclear Science. This podcast is produced by Canadian Nuclear Laboratories, Canada's premier nuclear science and technology organization. To learn more about us, visit us on social media or on our website at www.cnl.ca.